Welcome back to another great episode of Comedians in Bed, where comics can, where comedians can come and be comedians, man. One of the hottest podcasts out right now. And as you always know, I have another great guest for you. Know, I always like to do an introduction, man. I found this wonderful soul, wonderful person on Instagram and was dropping so much knowledge. I'm like, they're not teaching us this here in Columbus, Ohio. So I was like, I gotta go to the source. Let me go to the source and let me bring the source to you guys. I'm so happy that we have this beautiful person on here with us today. We like to refer to her as the comedy adjacent. Please give it up for the wonderful Amy Hawthorne, everybody.
Hello.
How are you doing today?
I'm good.
That's good. That's good, man. I'm so glad that we got you on here. I didn't tell you before, but like I'll be seeing your videos. I'll be like, oh, that's good. And I'll be sending it to people. I'll be like, look, you gotta check this out. So if you got a whole bunch of random Ohio people, I'll send them your way.
Oh, that's great. Thank you. Such a funny thing of like, I do them to be helpful and for people to watch, but I'm always sort of like surprised still incredibly flattered when someone's like, oh, I watched that video, it was about blah blah blah, it was so helpful.
Because I don't know, like, you know, comedians are kind of weird. I know I kind of keep to myself a little bit until I like get to know you like that. So it's like if someone's just like giving you this information, it's like, oh well, let me just write this down real quick. You know, so, it's always fun, it's always good. When you first hopped on the IG, like, did you think that would be something you would be doing, or was it just like, you know, I'm just here to take pictures?
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, of course, originally IG was just taking some pictures. And I remember one of my friends, you know how people are about social media. So I was like, no, I like Twitter. I don't need to get on this Instagram thing that you're talking about. And then my friend was like, they have pictures of cute dogs on here. And then, you know, I realized it's such a great tool for if you're running a show or, you know, doing any kind of comedy content, even when it was still just pictures, like, you know, you can put up pictures of the performers and of the audience and behind the scenes stuff. And it just became, I think I always used it a little bit more marketing-y than personal.
Yeah.
So I always had that kind of thought in my head. And then, yeah, it really it turned into this just shortly after the pandemic. I was sitting at the bar at the club with someone was asking me a question, because, you know, nobody tells you anything in comedy. Yeah. There are no straight answers or whatever. And the bartender was like, you should make videos of this, because, like, that's awesome that you just shared that information with that person, but I can think of 50 other people that need to know that, and you don't have time to sit and talk to them one by one.
I find interesting that you like dogs. What kind of dog do you got?
Oh, I don't. This is the thing. I don't have a dog.
Okay.
I am allergic to dogs. So it's a weird kind of like the thing you can't have, but I can have them in pictures because they don't.
Yeah, I didn't grow up with animals, but I'm kind of becoming a cat person, but I'm not a cat person enough to have one, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so yeah. Out there in New York, do you guys have a lot of pets? Like just walking around and stuff? Like, is that your thing? Because in movies we see, I've never been to New York, but in movies we see, that's a lot. I actually flew over in a helicopter once. It was like Jersey.
What?
Yeah. It's from my birthday.
Flew over in a helicopter.
Cause like I kind of, but not really. But like in the movies, we just see y'all walking with a lot of dogs. Like, if that's what y'all do, is like, or is that like not a real New York thing?
It is now, because everyone got a dog during the during lockdown, and which is great. There's like so many more dogs than there used to be, like twice as many as there used to be. Yeah. But I mean, I think I always think about the thing, though. There's a lot of there are dog walkers. So you see that one guy with the six dogs like in the movie. But it's very I feel like not everybody's super into their dog anymore. Like, you can see they're just like really quick going out for a walk. I saw this poor man like dragging his dog along the other day, and I was like, oh, you didn't realize you were going to have to go back to the office and you'd still have this dog. But yeah, there's some, there's definitely like the regular dogs I see in my neighborhood of the people, you know, taking them out for their evening walks and whatever. And so that's kind of nice.
Did you grow up in New York?
No, I grew up in a very tiny town in New England.
Okay. Okay. That's, yeah, that's what's up. That's what's up.
Yeah.
How did you, I mean, I know it's not far, but how do, why, yeah, why did you make the move to New York?
I actually took a very long route around. So far. I, you know, I went off to college, but I stayed in New England. And so then the first place I moved, I got a job in Boston right after I graduated because it's the nearest big city. And then I actually moved around a few more times, ended up in Los Angeles before I was in New York. And that was when I got interested in comedy stuff. And then this was maybe like 2014, I want to say. I had kind of gotten to a point where like I knew I wanted to become a booker of, you know, a club or a kind of a brand of shows that was more than just like, oh, hey, sometimes I do one show here, you know, like it can be kind of scrambly when you're producing independent shows. And I was like, I want to really be able to like build something. And I just kind of looked around LA at the time. And I felt like at a club would probably be the best way to do that. And there just wasn't going to be an opportunity for me to step into that role at any of the clubs anytime soon. So a couple of my friends and I were like, all right, let's give New York a try. See what that's talking about. And we were all like, you know, let's go for a year. And if it doesn't work out, it's not like so much changes in a year that we can't come back and pick up where we left off. And then I did not leave after the year.
Yeah. I never thought about that before. You know, some people, not saying this about you, but some people like, they're just like fans of comedy or like they give comedy a try and it doesn't really work out, but they can be like a great producer. They can end up being like a great editor or a great booker. How does one like get into like, or they can start like their own club. Like how does one get into like being a booker?
You just do it. I mean, it's sort of, it's interesting because it's so much like, you know, doing stand-up comedy, there is no, I mean, yes, you can take classes. Yes, there are books. Yes, you can, you know, study clips of the people you like, but you just have to start going to open mics and that's how you become a comedian. It's the same thing if you're a fan of comedy and you want to do something comedy adjacent, as I do like to call it, you just start, you just find a place. So like, actually funny, you should bring up Instagram. I really started with helping comics with understanding like what social media even was and what podcasts were and how to build a website. And then, you know, a couple of comics were like, hey, let's start a show together. And then I was booking a show and producing a show, you know, it just kind of happens. Or, you know, I was lucky enough to have those comics who asked me, but if you are a big fan of comedy anywhere in the country, in the world, really, and you're like, oh, I wish we had a better comedy show or a different kind of comedy show in my city, like, you just go find, you know, a bar or a laundromat or a pizza place and say, like, could we have a comedy show here on Tuesday nights? And then you do it. You know, Eventbrite's free, like, it's so easy now, too, with so much stuff on the internet.
Yeah, and doing everything on your own, I can definitely see how that definitely brings. When you're like booking and you brought up social media, how important is that? I kind of heard that like your social media is your resume. Like are you accidentally going on these pages? Are you looking for material? Or are you just looking to see like how their page looks? Does it look like a comedian's page?
Yeah. Well, do you want the answer that's personally me or like the general?
Personally, you.
Yeah. If I'm looking at somebody's social media, I am looking for just like, honestly, even signs that they're a real comedian. That sounds mean a little bit, but like I've gotten things from people that, you know, it was an inquiry. Hi, I'm visiting from out of town. You know, I'm from Ohio. I'm from Kansas. I'm, you know, somewhere that I have no contacts. I don't know the scene. So I just have to rely on whatever information this person has given me. And I've gone to their Instagram or their TikTok and it's like just walks in the woods and pictures of their girlfriend and the engagement ring and stuff. And there's no jokes, no flyers, no dates, nothing like that. And I'm like, is this person really do comedy? I don't know. But I don't think there's any like what it should look like. But I do want to see like that you've got, you know, flyers in your stories and maybe even on your main and some clips. Doesn't have to be, you know, three clips a week or the greatest heckler takedown of all time. Just at least like you do, like clearly you do comedy regularly enough to have collected clips.
Yeah. I try not to, I'd be like, okay, because I'm starting to just do just reels in general. I know that's like important. So I'm just trying to do like, okay, I have a thought. I'm just going to talk about it. Mm-hmm. I try not to let it get too distracted, like not too many podcast clips, not too many just regular clips, not too many stand-up clips. So people don't have to like do like a deep search
exactly.
for it.
Just, you know, see all of right you there. In
yeah.
one
so should you like have it look in a certain way, or should you just do whatever you want and then just, you know, have a couple pinned here to like let them get like a good taste of it, you know?
Yeah, I think basically what you're doing is probably the best formula, because yeah, have a couple things pinned, and like you said, don't make it be six podcast clips in a row, so the only thing, so they have to keep scrolling to find a stand up. But you know, if you've got the walk and talks or the talk to the camera kind of talking head things, you know, mix them in so there is basically in an overview, in a quick glance, there's an overview, I guess is the thing. I, you know, there was that weird period of time where you're supposed to make your grid look a certain way. Mm-hmm. And I don't think anyone except for like, you know, people who are paying too much, like brands, like businesses who are paying too much for a PR person are doing that anymore.
Yeah. No, you did say that some people like reach out to you like on IG. I've started sending out my availables as I collect Booker's email. I don't really reach out through IG. I'm not saying that it's wrong, but as a Booker, how do you, because you know, you sometimes you might reach out to somebody. How should someone reach out to a Booker?
Mm-hmm. So I like email, and I think anybody who is a club booker or like a very busy booker, you know, if they've got a weekly show or more often than that, or a set of shows that they run, email's good because it is searchable and like you can always find stuff later. Whereas like when people DM me, God only knows, you know what I mean? Like if I can't do something about that DM right now, I'm going to get 10 more DMs and I'll forget, you know, it just kind of gets lost. But I think that's maybe a bit of a generational thing too, because I know, I know a lot of younger people who book shows that are, you know, fairly busy, mm-hmm. not, you know, at the level necessarily of like full-time club, but they only want DMs and like, they're like, oh, I never check my email. It's just a bunch of spam. So a little bit is a guessing game, I think, but I don't think you can ever really go wrong with email.
Yeah. I'm going to actually, that's why I was looking down. I'm going to actually read to you email that I sent. I'm not familiar with who I actually sent it to. I'm going to assume that I didn't know this booker at all in general, because I didn't like previously state, hey, we met. So I just put, hello, my name is Ty Erskine, located in Columbus, Ohio. I've heard great things about your club and I'm interested in performing. Early in the year, I was a finalist for Funniest Person in Columbus contest at Funny Bone Comedy Club. Last month, I was a finalist at Wiley's Comedy Club Fireworks competition. And I'm currently a semi-finalist for Go Bananas Comedy Club Funniest Person in Cincinnati contest. Below is my tape available for dates. Below is my tape and available for date of the month of September. And I left a clip and then I put several dates that I have below. Mm-hmm. And then if it's someone that I know, then I'll be like, hey, I was at your club last month. Try to remind them when it was. Mm-hmm. Looking forward to coming back. You had a great atmosphere. Below are my dates. I don't put a clip because they saw me. But if it's kind of been too long, then I think about probably putting it, but I don't. Yeah. I'm not sure yet.
All right, I'll go backwards. So I would just put a clip every time. It's better to give someone more information than they need. And, you know, like you can phrase it as like, you know, if you need a refresher on, there's, you know, a nice way you can put it where you're not making it sound like I assume you forgot me or or anything like that. Or you're dumb and won't remember. You know, like there's a way you could just say it really nicely. But I just think like my main rule of thumb is give more information rather than less.
Okay.
Because every round trip an email has to take is taking up time and possibly losing you. You know, so for like me, because I also did a lot of other things for the club besides booking, there would be sort of about a day and a half a week, and then maybe an hour in each other day where I was focused on booking. And if I, in that hour, had to ask a follow-up question, and then you didn't get back to me until after that next hour, the next day, now it's 3 days later and maybe the spot's gone or, you know, whatever. So I err on the side of too much information. People can, you know, skim and not read and not click if they don't want to. And then I think the only thing I would change on the first one is have the, like, the specific, like, September. Because I think you use the phrase, like, early in the year or something like that. Like, be, because you're like, below, I have my availability for September.
Oh, so my fault.
Have the September in the first thing of, like, I'm interested in performing. I'm available in September, or I'll be in the city in September, just because the other thing, and I'm as guilty of this as anybody, is, you know, also people don't always read a whole thing, or they do kind of skim. But if I can see, at least for me, especially too, and again, your mileage will vary. We're all our own monsters. I put things in buckets by month, and I love, especially if it's even in the subject line, like Ty Erskine coming to New York, September 2024. Or I mean, you know what I mean? That's a weird, I don't know why you said September, but you know what I'm saying? Or like, available for dates in January, stuff like that. Cause then I'm like, okay, I know when I need to pay attention to this.
Okay.
Cause I know when I'm booking January.
Okay. What I do in the availables, I just put like the month and then availables. That's all I put. Okay. All right. Cool. Okay, cool. That's good information to know. Yes. Yeah. All right, cool. Earlier we were talking about how, you know, you get into booking, you might start at a, you know, bar show or something like that. Mm-hmm. You eventually work your way up to the club. I've known comics who are producing shows, and I noticed that they have, you know, either jam-packed their venue or their bar, and then they take it to a club. How does one comic who is a producer take their bar show or their local show into a club and keep it consistently going in there?
Yeah. Well, the good thing about once it's in there should be that you don't have to do as much work to get all those butts in those seats, because the club is doing marketing as well. So, you know, occasionally there can be that translation issue where, like, oh, this used to be cool and kind of underground, and now it's at a club, so it feels stuffy, and people who used, like, it can turn off the audience. But generally speaking, you know, if you have the ability between your lineup and whatever marketing and advertising you do to get people to come watch a comedy show in the back of a bar, they'll definitely all come to see a comedy show at a club, you know, that has a good reputation, you know, because it just sort of feels a little more official. And then as far as like getting into clubs, every club kind of has different needs, but in general, it's kind of the same thing as like reaching out for spots. You know, you reach out and you're like, hey, me and so-and-so have been producing this show at a bar for the past 7 months. We've sold out the last three. Here's some sample lineups. Here's a clip from the show last month. We'd love to do it monthly at this club. Please let me know if you need any other information, kind of stuff. It's basically the thing, like you're giving your show's credits instead of your credits.
Yeah. And the show pretty much stays in the club as long as it's putting butts in the seats.
Usually. And then, and again, every club kind of has different, you know, marketing and business models. For New York Comedy Club, when we would review all of our produced shows at the beginning of the year, we had we had four buckets, and three of them were shows to keep. And so like they were based on like, is it interesting, unique, artistic merit, you know, so, something like that. And then is it putting butts in seats? And so if you had just a generic, you know, stand-up showcase where there's six comics, but it could be any six comics, I could have booked these comics, or they're not as good as the comics I book, and it's also not bringing in people, you're out. Mm-hmm. If you are consistently bringing in people, but maybe your show books like younger comics than normally work the club, you get to stay in and grow that show because you're bringing in people. And then as far as like anything that was like interesting or unique, that really spoke to like a specific comics voice or a specific format or a specific demographic, that, you know, and I mean that in like so many different ways, not even just, you know, religious or ethnic or men, women kind of thing, just like any kind of like, oh, this is just really like college kids love this show kind of a thing is even one that gets to stay, even if it's not doing as well numbers wise. I mean, it has to hit a certain minimum or else we're losing money, but yeah, basically either make sure you're filling the seats or make sure you're doing something like really interesting or unique.
I definitely agree. I'm not trying to do that, but I know some people that I just want to get a little tip, you know.
Exactly. You're doing the Lord's work. You're spreading information to people who need it.
Because I had someone on here and they were like, yeah, I did a local show in Detroit, and I think they might have got it to a club, and then they moved to LA and they're at the Ice House. Shout out to D-Lo B, and she's just selling it out and she's booking like top comedians. And I'm like, I didn't think to ask her like, how did she get in there? So I was like, okay, let me I have Amy on here, let me go ahead and ask her. Now for a comic individually, like, here's the thing about doing comedy in Columbus, Ohio. Like, people, they give you, and not just here in Columbus, but they give you their opinions, you know? Mm-hmm. And then I hear their opinions, and then I hear you, and I'll be like, all right, that's not what she said. So, you know, I'm always being told to be in the club, always, you know, on the weekends, the show that you're interested. But you had a clip that just wrecked my whole life, and you were like, you
know, sorry. I know exactly what you're talking about.
He was like, no, you actually don't need to be here all the time. And at the time, I mean, I wasn't always at the club, but I was like, I mean, I was going to go. But then he said what you said.
Yeah. So
what's like your philosophy, like if you see, like for a comic to get booked as a, you know, as a host or a regular in a club, what's like that process, and what do bookers look for, you know, to get the difference between, okay, this is a person that's serious and this is just a person that takes it as a hobby?
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the things for me specifically is, you know, New York is like the supply and demand is insane, right? Like there's so much supply beyond the demand that like, I don't know. I've never even really had to, it's been years since I've watched someone's come in for an audition at the club. And I was like, does this person actually know what a joke is? What is happening here? Or like, oh, this is like a really nice retired lady who decided to start doing comedy. So I actually have, and I don't want to be like, woe is me, there's too many good comics, but like I had the opposite issue where it would just be like, I would be watching, you know, if I had 10 people on a showcase, all 10 of them were probably, for whatever level they were at, absolutely competent to be working at my club. But I only had 3 spots. And so I had to figure out, like, I had to not find a reason. That sounds awful. But I mean, sometimes it is completely arbitrary of just like, oh, this is the one who showed up. This person showed up earliest. They showed up on time. I trust them that they're going to show up on time for the other spots. Or like, they just happened to, you know, I just happened to like that one joke about cats more than anybody else's, even though it's that. So I mean, I think there is something to be said for showing face and being present and on clubs knowing that you're interested in it. And I mean, when I first started in LA, that was what, like the Comedy Store was that way. Like you just had to hang out. There was no other way unless you were famous. And, yeah, New York just really isn't that vibe. And I feel like some other cities like Chicago aren't that vibe. I feel like Austin's a little bit that vibe. Anyway, but, you know, I send an email. Do you know what I mean? You just inquire. Yeah. You inquire to get an audition. It doesn't hurt if they're able to put a face to that name. But, yeah, my thing was more like I saw people literally every day. Sitting at the bar, showing up. They clearly just came from their day job. sit drinking for 3 hours. Nice people, really liked them. But A, they were clearly not doing other spots. Like, if you are sitting at my bar drinking beer all night, you're not doing comedy. And B, like, I'm not putting my booking hat on while we're sitting here at the bar having a chat.
Right,
like,
right.
You exist to me as a person, but until you send me that email and get into my spreadsheet, you don't exist to me as someone waiting for an audition.
Mm-hmm.
I will say though, like, when I ran like weekly bar shows and stuff like that, I did appreciate people coming to hang before they had done, before they did their, if they hadn't been on the show before. One, because they could get the vibe and, you know, understand like, hey, this is not a room where that type of thing is going to work, or this is, you know, they're sort of this kind of crowd usually, or whatever. And also, like, it never hurts to have a couple extra comics sitting in the back also laughing with everybody. It makes the room feel pretty good. So I just like that. But it was also never a full requirement or anything.
Yeah. What do you, when you guys are putting on showcase, because I did a showcase at the top of this year. I did horrible, not in a sense like my jokes were bad, but like I had no idea what they were looking for and I didn't arrange it the correct way. So like when you guys are throwing showcases, what exactly are you looking for from the comic?
Sorry to be rearranging myself.
No, you're totally fine.
I have kind of three things I look for, which is like, okay, does this person know how to write jokes and structure them together? Like in a flowing set, because I think this is where I'm going to get real pretentious with all of my comedy theories. But, you know, there's these sort of like fulcrum moments in comics careers. And the first one is usually, you know, around 2 years where you really learn how to write a joke well. Like plenty of people have 5 minutes that'll get them by and maybe even 8 or 10 before that. But you can like notice a difference there. And then the next one is probably somewhere in the next year of really being able to structure a set. And then somewhere around like 5 or 6 is when people usually figure out how to write a joke for themselves in their own voice to make sure they're really saying something unique to them. Not that it's auto, I don't mean that like it's autobiographical, but just that it's like revealing their beliefs and opinions. So that's kind of what I'm looking for. So I'm looking for, one, do you know how to write jokes and put them together into a logical set so that, you know, someone sitting in the audience can like follow your train of thought? Two, are you saying something? I always put it this way. Could I take your jokes and give it to another equally competent comedian on this showcase? And would it do just as well if they came out of their mouth? Mm-hmm. Even if every person on the showcase is telling a joke about, you know, plastic straws and turtles, they should all be different jokes because you're all different people.
Right.
And then just comfort and comfort on stage, ability to kind of connect with the audience as opposed to like performing at them. And then to some extent too, of just like charisma. I don't need everybody. I actually, you know, some of my favorite comedians are very dry and dark. So it's not necessarily like, oh, you got to be Mr. Wonderful the whole time. But there is something to be said for that, like, ineffable thing about a person that, like, oh, everybody wanted to hear the next thing they were about to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One video that you had that, and it has to do with the comedy club. One video that you had that made me was like, all right, I gotta follow this person, was when you were talking about, I think it was because like we kind of, I can't speak for everybody, but I would use it as a nervous tick, you know, to calm my nerves down, is how to hold the mic.
Yes.
And I was like, okay, so like how should people hold the mic? Because when you're on stage, you only have the stool, the mic, and the mic stand, so you could use those to your advantage. But sometimes people do try to get a little too cute with how they look with the mic in their hand. So how should comics hold a mic? And I know you're going to talk about the importance of it, but I actually like saw why you should hold it a certain way. When I was at a comedy club, I was like, see, that's why you should hold it a certain way. So like,
yeah.
Why should comics, I mean, how should comics hold a mic?
Yeah. You want to hold the metal part of the mic is the key point. Obviously not the speaky into-y part. I don't know what any of them are called. But you don't want to hold the wire. And the other thing too is like keeping your hands on the metal part. You can still hold it a number of different ways. You know what I mean? It's not like you have to go like this.
Yeah.
But yeah, you don't want to be holding it. So many people cup the bottom, like right where the wire comes out, and they kind of like, and so they end up bending it, and it feels like in some cases it is like a security blanket. They're like holding on for dear life. And if they kind of fold it up, fold that wire up, it feels some kind of way. And, yeah, that'll just break the microphone.
The mic stand too, because I used to, and then when I when I get to the end of it, I'm like, okay, I can't get this. I can't figure out how to do this. And then it's like, now it's broke the rest of the night. So now what I do, I just put my hand there and I just hold it. Yeah. And I just go like this, like I move the mic stand like that. But that's as far as I go.
Yeah.
And all because of the advice that you said. Yeah. But I see, because
I love like that was your entry point.
It's so much money. Like I didn't realize how much. And then like I was at a club one day and like the mic kept going on. I was like, cause everybody's not holding the mic right. Like, and it sounds bad, messes up the show. So no, I get
it. And I mean, that's the thing too. It's not even just, I mean, I was definitely saying it of like, do you understand how many microphones and wires we have to buy because you keep breaking it? But it like, it also is like, it messes up the show, not just for everybody else, but it can do it like you, it can cut out during your set as well. Especially the harder you are like cupping it, or bending that wire, or if you like hold too far down, you're going to hit the little like eject button and literally like, oh, now the mic isn't even plugged in anymore. And you're in the middle of telling a joke.
I've seen that happen plenty of times.
Yeah.
I've seen it. I've done it myself, actually.
Everybody has. So some of my favorite, really good, really experienced comedians actually said to me at some point after that video of like, I didn't know I've been holding the mic wrong for 15 years.
Yeah. And I was like, I'm glad I know this early. Like, and I think I was talking to another comic and he's kind of into engineering. So he's like, yeah, like it really messes it up. And he also gave me a tip to like check the mic, like the volume and stuff like that while you're on stage. Like just say a couple like short words to just check it out and hold it like this, like right here, just to see like where you get the most sound at. So it's been very helpful.
It
kind of helps my anxiety too, because when I first get up there, you kind of worry about like what's the first thing you're going to say. So now I just already know what I'm going to say the first thing, and I just focus more so on the mic than their reaction. Yeah. Like, so yeah. One thing you talked about was spring cleaning your career.
Oh, now,
what does that mean?
It's kind of Marie Kondoing it a little bit. Yeah. Even though I know everybody's over Marie Kondo at this point, but like, I think that especially, so the, like I was saying earlier, like it's never been easier to put together your own show because, you know, there's tools like Eventbrite. You can buy ads on Instagram. You don't even have to buy it. You can do, you know, organic TikToks and Instagrams and get a good reach and Facebook and whatever. But the downside of that is now it feels like you have to do a billion things that are not just writing jokes and doing them on stage.
Yeah.
And that was kind of the point of that exercise, because I knew I myself was doing too many things that I had hours in the day at the time. And I knew a lot of other people who were doing that, but, and then we're also getting really stressed out. Like, oh, I only put out one clip this week instead of three. And now I got to go home and I got to make some more clips. And then they would like beat themselves up. So it became this really vicious cycle.
Yeah.
So that's basically about like, write down everything you do in a week or a month. And like really look at it, because I mean, the first thing is just the power of writing it down. Sometimes you're like, oh my God, yeah, I'm spending this much time, whatever, dumb thing. And then you know, start prioritizing it, because, you know, there's things you got to do because you got to pay rent and eat some food. So you got to do those things. And then there's things you love, which is, you know, presumably writing jokes and telling them on stage.
Yeah.
And then there are things you do in service of that. So, like, yes, you need to be posting on TikTok and Instagram a certain amount so that you give the appearance, for lack of, I mean, it also has to build a following. I mean, obviously you get people coming to your show, but, like, you know, you can't just stop posting for 3 weeks and have people, you know, people wonder what happened to you.
Yeah.
But, you know, make sure, okay, the amount of time I am devoting to my social media presence is related to how much it's serving me and getting more people to come to my shows and getting myself booked on more shows. Not like, you don't want to start chasing that for its own sake.
Yeah. Yeah. I think at first for me, I just was like, okay, I'm putting these clips out so you guys can see that I actually can do comedy. But then recently it just became too much. And I was just like, all right, I'm going to do social media from this time to this time. I'm going to post at this time. I'll work on a reel at this time. I want to put my phone on do not disturb. I want to take my alerts off, but not on this app and this app, because I reach out to comics on here to try to get booking or whatever. And I just kind of like prioritize, like just try to make it as orderly as possible so that my day can be more efficient and it's just not cluttered. Because the house is already cluttered, but I don't need this to be cluttered. Like, I can't. Because I'm doing this, I'm on my phone more than I'm in my house. And I just, So I found out that doing it that way has helped me tremendously. Like, I have a calendar up here. And then, like, doing that more, reaching out to more people, you guys are more like, well, hit me up on my email. And I'm like, all right, let's be more professional. Email, you know what I'm saying? But I like to reach out DM first, because I don't want to just randomly email you and be like, who are you? You know what I'm saying? So, yeah.
That, I mean, but also, I mean, that is part of a booker's job, is to get random. You get 60 to 100 random emails every day of, who is this person? Well, if I read the email, I might find out.
Speaking of emails, man, I was in a situation where this was so, like, I wish I could have recorded it. So I had told, my friend had told me about this club out in, like, DC. I believe it's a club or might be just a venue spot. And I had reached out, and the first month I didn't hear anything back. By the way, don't get offended if they don't reach back out to you. But then I reached out to them again the next month, but then they responded to the previous month. And then my friend was there when they did that. And I was like, hey, they reached back out to me. You should shoot him another one. And he shot him another email and he got booked that day. And I had to tell them, hey, I can't do this booking that you want me to do, because I just got booked for something else. So when you are in between, like, bookings, like, which one should you pick? I mean, obviously you might think, I want to go with the one with more money. And yes, this club was paying me and the other one wasn't, but I was like, I just did a hosting spot at this club. I want to keep, you know, keep my foot in the door. So I was really, like, panicking, but I didn't, you know, how do you choose, like, between what club if you get booked, like, double?
Yeah, I think it is going to be case by case.
Yeah.
Of weighing the benefits of each. And to some extent, you have to hopefully know each of the clubs and the bookers and owners a little bit, because there are some people that there is no excuse for you to say no. Like, your wife could be in the hospital, your dad could have just died. It doesn't matter. I gave you a spot. It's at this time and you better be there.
Yeah.
And then, you know, other people, it's fine as long as you're honest and upfront about, hey, I have another gig I've got to take. And it's in a, and it also depends on the lead time. So, like, if you were going the other way, like, let's say you were taking the paid spot over the unpaid spot, most reasonable people, if you're like, hey, I'm so sorry, I just got offered a paid spot that same night, I'm going to have to take that one instead, and I'd love to come back another time. As long as it's, like, at least a week or two out, it should be fine. And then, you know, in some places, honestly, in New York, people cancel spots the day before, day of. I hate day of. It's the worst, but I also understand it just happens.
Yeah.
But the Yeah, I think you do have to weigh, though, like, does the money matter as much as building a relationship with a club that you want to build a relationship with? So, I mean, there's no cut and dry answer. Yeah. It's everybody's, it's case by case, what matters most. I think the key is to just be honest about it when you're reaching back out to the club. I mean, like, if the honest reason is your club stinks and this better club offer, don't say that. Mean. but you know what I mean, and like and lead time. I think there is, I think people forget that anyone who's booking is booking not just you but all these other people. So if you are canceling in the morning of the spot, there might be two or three other people that did the same thing, and now what is this person who's booking supposed to be doing? They're going to scramble, and now they're going to have a really bad taste in their mouth. But if you're, again, giving them enough lead time, every at least half good booker has like contingency plans in place for things.
Okay. Now, I'm not at this level yet, but I do hear like a whole bunch of vets talk about like the pay scale and how it doesn't change. What is like the basic rundown of like if I'm like a feature and I'm coming with a headliner? Like, I always wonder, I never really thought about it until like I guess I started doing comedy or getting more bookings. Like, who's like paying for like the hotel, like the rental car, the flight? Like, who does like all that? Like, is there like a contract, like just like a basic rundown, so people who do want to do like feature works and be like headliners know what to like at least expect?
Yeah. I mean, the sad, unfortunate base of it is the feature pays for just about everything. If you, sometimes a club and sometimes a headliner will cover the travel costs and the hotel. Sometimes the headliner will pick a feature because you are the travel cost. Like, if you've got a car and can drive them, that's part of the deal. And then typically a venue will pay the feature, but it is a very, very small amount of money. Yeah. And I did an interview with a couple folks about feature work. And one of the things they said that basically you should get merch. And it makes seem silly when you're just a feature, but people buy stuff and that'll pay for your hotel room and, you know, a bag of Cheetos or whatever. But I mean, also too, there are some headliners who are really generous and thoughtful. And obviously some of it is to do with like how much they're getting paid. If they're not getting that much, it's not like they've got all this extra to throw at you, but a lot of headliners will go above and beyond what the club is giving them to pay the feature.
I actually like that you talked about that because what did you just say? And I had it on the merch? Tip of my tongue. Yes. Thank you so much. I was like, I haven't messed up once this interview. Like, don't start now.
We're in the home stretch. You can do it.
Right. No, when I was so I was hosting at this club and this comedian named Bo Johnson was there, and I've never seen someone sell their merch. So I just kind of like sat back and watched how he did it. Mm-hmm. He was very friendly to everybody. He had like reasonable price. He had like just like a sticker for a dollar and then t-shirts, like variations of t-shirts, like two or three. And I was just really trying to watch and see, I like, how's he selling? Because I hear comics talk about like, you got to do the show, but then you also have to do the after show, which is talk to people and sell things to them. And it made me think about merch. And the reason why is because some comics, not all, but some comics already come in with, I should be getting paid this amount, but your work may not reflect that, but you can still make money from doing reels or selling merch. Like, how important is those other avenues of making money or producing shows like important for comics to earn like some type of money early on if that's important to them?
Really important, because there's no money in this. I mean, eventually there's some money. I know plenty of people who, you know, you'd call like middle class comics, and then obviously there's a level you can get to where you're doing really great. But Yeah, and it sucks. It's such a weird, it's a funny thing because it goes against my like inherent sort of sociopolitical beliefs because I think that like it is kind of wild that you have to pay your dues and not get paid for a long time. But I also sort of think that that's right. You know what I mean? Like there's a part of me where it's like, yeah, like they're, you have to, I would say this way of like, if you're a musician, you get to practice at home mm-hmm. before you go to the big thing. So of course, everywhere you perform, you should get paid. And I mean, musicians have a hard time getting it. That's a whole other story, but comedians practice in public. So like at what point is it not practice and you're doing work and you should be paid? And I think everybody's got their own feeling of where that line is. But I also do like, and this is a generational thing, like in every walk of life, not just comedy, that I think younger people in like in their early 20s now are really like, this is some bullshit. And I'm actually going to say something. Whereas my older sister has just been putting up with this garbage. Like, well, we live in a capitalist society. What are you going to do? But yeah, so if you can, I know people who make, you know, basically pay their rent from their podcast sponsors, kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. And what's nice about something like that as compared, I mean, so merch is good. You always want to have merch. Like you said, even if you're selling stickers for a dollar, that's actually one of the best merch items. I don't know how you singularize that. that you can sell because it's not, you're going to make a lot of money on each sticker. Even if you're only selling them for a dollar, people love stickers. But anyway, that's going to be variable. Your spot pay money is going to be variable no matter how in demand you are at every level. You know, you're going to have good weeks, bad months. But like if you have a podcast or if you're consistently doing sponsored, you know, reels or getting ad money from your TikToks or whatever, that can help keep the like the lows from being lower. You know, it'll give you like a little cushion and a threshold. So, and that can just also give you like that mental peace of mind that lets you focus on writing and performing and not be constantly anxious about like, oh, am I gonna make $1,000 or $100 this week?
Yeah. I was one comic posted that she had, I think she had did a show with us, another comic, I can't remember his name, but she said that he makes like six figures a year just selling merch. And for some, I don't know why, for whatever reason, it just clicked. I was like, well, everybody sell merch. Like just people at my church that sells t-shirts for like the church event. Like you, like they make money. Like you don't have to be this well-known comic to make merch. You could be a regular person making merch. Yep. So I was like, well, then make merch. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, exactly. There's nothing.
You don't have to struggle. Like you can find a way.
Exactly. And there's nothing embarrassing or being like, full of yourself about doing it. Like you're saying, ladies of church got t-shirts they're selling.
Yeah, and the letters are crooked. So like you can do it. You could definitely do it, man. You could definitely do it. I got one more personal question. Then I had like some fans come in and ask a question. Only one.
All right.
But it sounded nice with it not being singular. Is crowd work clips ruining comedy?
Yes, 100%. I have very strong feelings about that. And I'm not even going to, I try to be good and see both sides of things and like couch. I think you've probably noticed all of my answers are couch things like, well, but this and usually that. They're terrible. I think we're past the peak of it, thank God. But it's really, the one couching thing I will say is I understand the train of thought that leads people to post them, but it's ruining everything. It's especially too, again, with the pandemic, so much stuff changed and people forgot how to act in public. And then there's people who are like 25, 26 years old right now, who is exactly who you want to be coming to your comedy club and becoming a fan and, you know, staying with you for life, who literally, like, you know, they turned 21 right before lockdown. They weren't allowed to go out to anything. They could, like, and it, you know, theaters and comedy and stuff like that was probably the longest closed stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So their main experience is reels that are just, you know, comedian owns heckler or just crowd work. So it's, and it's not even like those salacious ones anymore. It'll just be like, you know, a nice little piece of crowd work, which is fun. And so they think that it's their job to talk during the show. And that's the worst. And then they get mad if, like, when you're trying to actually do comedy, it's, I hate it. I really think it, like, and, but not just younger people too, like everybody, for, you know, there's 45 year old women. We've got to, like, there was a woman who sat on the floor to avoid being kicked out because she was talking during the show. I'm not trying to say like, oh, it's only 27 year olds, you know, these Gen Zers or whatever. It's like everybody forgot how to act.
No, I definitely understand. You know, some clubs now, they even tell comics like you can't do crowd work. And I just always figured it was because they just wanted people to enjoy the experience and get their money's worth.
I mean, I do think though, like, I like crowd work live.
I think
it's part of the magic of, like, the great thing about comedy as opposed to theater is every show is unique. You had a, every time you go to a comedy show, you had a one of a kind experience.
Yeah.
And crowd work can be part of that if used correctly. Yeah. And it can also help you in transitions and segues in your set. So I like crowd work. I just hate crowd work videos.
Duly noted. So I had one person write a question, and I think this is a good question. They put, and when do you know it's the right time to move to New York City to better your comedy career?
Ooh, that's a good question. Especially, I mean, I would say never. I have been very negative lately about inflation and the cost of living in New York. So take that grain of salt with stuff. But like, I moved here 8 years ago or whatever. It's so much more expensive now than when I first moved here. Yeah. And that's not even a decade. But I mean, I think it's, but to be more helpful, you do really have to think about the financial situation of it. It is so expensive that you need to reasonably have a way that isn't comedy to make money. And if it is your merch or a podcast or something or comedy related, fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you know what, I'm going to go be a temp for a year and make that money. But then you need to remember you've got to, you know, that time and brain space is going to be taken up. Sorry, excuse me. And I think I always want to say, wait until it's like, you think it's time, you can't do anything more where you are, you've hit the ceiling, and then wait 6 months. Like, you want to show up in New York, either having been the guy that, like, when a headliner came through your town and you featured for them, or you were on a showcase with them, they're like, man, I can't believe that you're not in New York. You're, you know what I mean? Like, why are they hiding you here? Kind of a thing. Or when you show up to New York, people are like, wow, that's the best comedian I've seen come out of Boston in a year or 5 years or whatever. Because it's so, like, I really cannot also, besides how expensive it is, I have no idea how many comedians there are in New York. There's so many. I used to talk about this with Candy, who's the other New York Comedy Club booker and is now the booker. We would just be like someone would come in for an audition or someone would bring a friend and introduce them to one of us. And then that person had 20 other friends in their other clique that we didn't even know that whole clique existed.
Yeah.
And then that had enough, you know what I mean? And you would just suddenly be like, okay, I know 800 comedians.
Yeah.
Every one of them knows 50 comedians I don't know. So it's crazy. So it can be really hard to stand out is my point too. So it's wait 6 months longer at least than you think.
Yeah. Man, I have no plans to go to New York. I think it's fun, but you know, when you've been broke for so long and then you come out of college and then you have to pay student loans, mm-hmm. I have no desire. You know, I'm trying to just stay somewhere in the Midwest and, you know, go from there. I think, you know, because we're from Columbus, it's just, it's not a comedy city. So it's like, yeah. you know, you get here and then after you reach your peak, then it's like, okay, where am I going to go next? Mm-hmm. And my thought was just to stay in the Midwest because it's just easier flights. Like if I go to New York or LA, just one stop, I don't got to catch, you know what I'm saying? I just, less headache. Everything's getting more expensive.
Yeah. And I also think that another side effect of, you know, everything is online and you can make money on merch and podcast sponsorships and online social media sponsorships is you no longer have to live in Los Angeles or New York to make a living at this. Yeah. I think there is a lot of benefit to going to one of those scenes or maybe Austin or Chicago, but I'm not sure that I would put them in the same category because I do think like your peers are your greatest advocates and they're going to get you most of your work. So to have your peers be so numerous and be so high level, like it will get your name into more conversations. But also if you want to be, if your goal is to be a touring comedian and live a comfortable middle-class life, you might as well not live in the city because it's, you can own a house. The flights are going to be cheaper. You're probably closer to wherever you're going. You know what I mean? You don't have to, if you're in the middle going east or west or down or up, you know, like Nate Bargatze does not live, he lives off wherever he lives, you know? Yeah. And I know a couple other people who just were like, yeah, why was I spending all this money on an apartment I don't even live in most of the month?
Yeah. That, well, you know what? You sound like my mom. Okay. That was a good. And that's all that needs to be said. Like that. That is all that needs to be said. Like, you're barely there. Like, that, you know what? I'm barely here. And I'm like, bro, this is too much for me. Like, that's, hey. You are barely there. That is a point right there. We're going to play a quick game real quick called This or That. Just real quick, you got like 5 seconds to answer the questions. Let me see here. I'm going to go New York Knicks or LA Lakers.
Lakers.
All right. Dave Attell or Jeff Ross?
I don't know what the or is. The answer is Dave Attell.
Okay. Got your favorites. Okay. LA or New York?
Ooh. LA.
All right. All right. I like LA too.
All it's right, very warm. You don't get seasonal depression.
Yes. That the sunshine. The sunshine. Uh-huh. Wanda Sykes or Margaret Shaw?
Show. Ooh. Margaret.
Okay. And then Doozy. SUV Law and Order or Sex in the City?
Oh, definitely SUV Law and Order. Murder all day.
And it's kind of weird that in America, we just love murder and then wonder why
there's something wrong with all of us. For sure. But yeah, I'll fall asleep to Forensics Files. I mean, like, this is very soothing. They caught the guy with fingerprints. Love it.
Amy, as we start to wrap this up here, what's some words of motivation to any comedian that is listening to this right now?
This is one of my favorite things. Nobody's thinking poorly of you. They're too busy thinking poorly of themselves. Basically, you know, like, don't let your brain be mean to you and start dwelling on something stupid you said or that one guy in the audience who wasn't laughing. You know, like, brains are evil. They're amazing, but they are evil. And I think a lot of people get in their own way and in their own heads about things that nobody else is worried about at all.
Oh, man. You should be like a preacher. Like,
I have occasionally been like, should I start a cult? Not quite as wholesome as a preacher, but
hey, some of them ain't wholesome.
That's true.
I did this backwards, but I'm gonna still ask you. Who's on your Mount Rushmore for comedy?
Ooh, I mean, obviously Dave Attell. We've already said that. It's really hard though. After that, it's hard because it like there's so many. Yeah. I can't pick. What era are we talking? I am going to avoid answering the question by saying all of these things is my, I'm trying to think, because I also too, it's interesting, like I love, I love Legion of Skanks. I love Big J. Okerson. I love Ari Shaffir. I love, these garbage men. but also I love really like dark, witty women, Carmen Lynch, Adrian Appalucci, Liz Mealy, Sarah Tolomash. Those are like so up my alley, and it's just such different spheres. I think I will probably also put Lori Kilmartin up there for sure, because she has that amazing album about her dead dad. She's the first person I heard ever tell a joke about menopause. I think she's very outspoken about a lot of things that are important to me. And I'm not going to be able to fill the other two because I will feel too bad about.
Hey, you named a boatload of people. You're good. Yeah. You're good. I had Sarah on the show too. We did a Don't Tell show together. She's real nice. She's real nice.
Yeah. I think that was the first episode of your, I caught that on Instagram, and how I knew about your podcast.
Yeah. 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 See, hey man, you gotta get the right people on. You gotta get the right people on.
Exactly.
Amy, tell people why they should listen to Comedians in Bed.
Because it's delightful and it's very positive. I like this. This is a very like positive, and this is going to sound much more wholesome-y and preachery again, but I think that a lot of us do have a tendency to easily get negative, especially in comedy, and we need more positivity in our lives and to be able to like earnestly enjoy it and not have to make everything a joke or make everything cynical.
Man, Amy, that's just what you call good weed.
Bing bong.
Amy, man, tell people where they can find you at.
You can find me at Comedy Groupie on Instagram, on TikTok. I am Amy E. Hawthorne because I'm dumb and I had two different names, even though I tell people not to do that. or you can go to comedygroupie.com and that'll link to all of my YouTube, everything. You can find me one of those ways.
Hey, man, make sure you subscribe to this podcast, Comedians in Bed. You can listen to us wherever you listen to podcasts. We drop a live episode every Tuesday at 11 a.m., 8 a.m. for you guys out there in L.A. time. And then also follow us on IG at Comedians in Bed Podcast. We'd like to thank Amy for being with us today. This was like my dream interview. It was you and Joe Byers, and I got both of y'all on, so I'm happy about that. Yep. So glad we got you on here, Amy, man.
Thank you.
So happy. Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure and an honor.
And I just want to personally thank you too for just sharing this wealth of knowledge with us just in general. It has definitely helped me tremendously. A little boy out here in Columbus, Ohio, just trying to live his dreams. I appreciate it so much.
Love it.
All right, guys. We'll see you guys next week.